So we are on Numbers 19. Last week we did 17 and 18. And if we remember, this whole section, starting with chapter 16, right, is all about the priesthood. So 19 concludes that. But 16 is Korah's rebellion. When Korah decides that being a Kohathite's not good enough, he wants to be a priest as well, and the rest of Israel decides, hey, we want in on that action too. And Korah and his followers die, and then the next day Israel thinks it's a good idea to complain again and blame Korah's death on Moses and Aaron, so then God kills 14,000 instead of just 250 plus. Okay, so then chapter 17, we talked about how God took proactive measures to prove that Aaron really is his chosen priest. And then 18 is because the Levites and Aaron are chosen by God, and they are the ones that stand in the gap, and they are the ones that are going to take the punishment now instead of all of Israel. They get special gifts. They get special portions. The priests get the sacrifices, the Levites get the tithe. And we talked about how that should have been more than enough to supply them and their families if Israel had been faithful. Okay? So now we have chapter 19. Chapter 19 deals with how do you become clean after you've come in contact with someone who dies. Okay? This chapter's here because we just had almost 15,000 people die, maybe even 15,000. We had at least 14,950 die, probably plus, in chapter 16. Okay? So all those people are dead. Obviously, somebody has to, well, I guess Korah and his people, they're all swallowed in the earth, so nothing has to be done with them. And maybe the 250 were swallowed by fire, but the 14,700 that died by plague, you know, have to be dealt with, buried and whatever. So you touch a dead body, you become unclean. So Numbers 19 is what to do when you become unclean by coming in contact with the dead.
Was that not covered in Leviticus or not covered Mm-mm. in death?
It's not.
Oh, okay.
Mm-mm. You said that. In Leviticus, to become clean, the methods to becoming clean were either you washed and you waited until evening, right? You washed your body and you washed your clothes and you waited till evening to become clean. Those were for things that made you unclean, but not too unclean, like a mild uncleanness, okay? Or you had to wait 7 days, and then at the end of 7 days, you had to offer a sacrifice on top of washing your clothes and washing your body, okay? That was if you became seriously unclean, and those were if you were a leper and got healed. Right? Then from the time you were healed and showed yourself to the priest, then you had to wait 7 days. And then at the end of 7 days, you had to come to tabernacle and offer a sacrifice. Or that's Leviticus 14 or Leviticus 15. If you had an abnormal discharge, right? Then once that stopped, you had to wait 7 days and you had to bring a sacrifice. Okay? So the question is, what are we going to do when you become unclean by touching a dead person? Okay, so offering a sacrifice is difficult and expensive, especially if you're in the land and you live in like Galilee, right? Then you'd have to travel all the way down to Jerusalem to offer your sacrifice. Okay, and touching a dead person is a somewhat common occurrence. I mean, not that it's going to happen to you all the time, but you could live your whole life and never be a leper. Right, so you would never have to journey down to Jerusalem to offer sacrifice or have an abnormal discharge, so you would never have to do that. But more likely than not, you are going to come in contact with somebody dead, right? Your parents, possibly a child, right? I mean, because death is common to all. So God provided a way where you would not have to offer a sacrifice, okay? The sacrifice is basically offered ahead of time. And then you are allowed to use that as your sacrifice, right? Because this journeying to Jerusalem, purchasing a sacrifice would have been expensive and added stress, right, in a time that you're already in mourning for whoever it was that died. So he provides a way that a sacrifice is not required with every death, but purity and holiness can still be maintained among the people. Chapter 19 is divided into two sections. The first section is verse 1 to 13. Second section is 14 to 22. 1 to 13 is like the law, like all the ritual that has to be done. 14 to 22 is how you apply the law, okay, what you do and when it applies. Both of them start with a similar phrase. Verse 2 says this is the statute of the law. Verse 14 says this is the law. Okay, so it breaks it into two sections. Okay, so can someone read for me the first 13 verses of chapter 19? Numbers 19, 1 to 13.
Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "This is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel that they bring you an unblemished red heifer in which is no defect and on which a yoke has never been placed. You shall give it to Eliezer, the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp and shall be slaughtered in his presence. Next, Eleazar, the priest, shall take some of its blood with his finger and sprinkle some of the blood toward the front of the tent of the meeting 7 times. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Its hide and its flesh and its blood with its refuse shall be burned. The priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet material and cast it into the midst of the burning heifer. The priest shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in water and afterward come into the camp, but the priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns it shall also wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water and shall be unclean until evening. Now a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place, and the congregation of the sons of Israel shall keep it as water to remove impurity. It is purification from sin. The one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening, and it shall be a perpetual statute to the sons of Israel and to the alien who sojourns among them. The one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. That one shall purify himself from uncleanliness with the water on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, and then he will be clean. But if he does not purify himself on the 3rd day and on the 7th day, he will not be clean. Anyone who touches, of course, the body of a man who has died and does not purify himself defiles the tabernacle of the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from Israel. Because the water for impurity was not sprinkled on him, he shall be unclean. His uncleanliness is still on him."
Okay, so verse 1 and 2, again, God, just like throughout all of Numbers, God speaks. And this time he speaks to Moses and Aaron. Remember we talked about in chapter 18, God spoke to Aaron alone, and that was very unusual. Only in Leviticus 10 and Numbers 18 does God speak to Aaron and Aaron alone. Okay, a lot of times he speaks to Moses and Aaron, but never just Aaron alone. So here again, it's Moses and Aaron. Aaron is included because this is still all about the priesthood, right? Eleazar is the main man in this, and so the priests have to know what they do because they have to be the ones to do this. Okay, it's going to be the responsibility of the priests. Verse 2, it says, "This is the statute of the law." That word for law in Hebrew is Torah, which is the name given to the first 5 books of the Bible. Okay, so this is the law commanded by Yahweh directly from the mouth of God. Right? This is the Torah. This is what you are to do. Okay? Second half of verse 2, "Speak to the sons of Israel that they bring you," okay, so what is Israel supposed to do? "An unblemished red heifer in which is no defect and on which a yoke has never been placed." Okay? So there are several qualifications for exactly the animal that is to be brought. First, it is to be red. This is a roan color or reddish brown. Okay, and like a sacrificial animal, it was to be unblemished, right? A bull or a goat or a sheep, right, were to have no blemishes. Perfect. So God just says it has to be red and it has to be unblemished. So our good friends, the rabbis, right, they take that and say, well, what exactly does that mean? So this is what they came up with. The rabbinical interpretation extended the red and perfect characteristics to mean the cow in its entirety was of a red color, not spotted, mottled, or blended with other colors. It was said that 2 hairs of another color on its body were sufficient to disqualify it. So I want to know who it was that examined the whole cow to figure out if it had two hairs of a different color. Okay. God just says it has to be red. They take it and say they cannot even have two colors, two hairs of another color. Okay. All right. So that's how they interpreted the red and the unblemished part. Okay. Then it also says a yoke has never been placed on it. So this is a young, strong cow, right, that has not been used in the field, right? A yoke has not been placed upon it. Okay, again, our good friends, the rabbis. This is what they said. It was invalid even if someone rode on, leaned on, crossed the river with its help, had a cloak draped across it, or even had its lead rope doubled across its back. If aught had been done for the sake of the heifer, it was valid. So if you do something to help the cow, it's okay. But if for the sake of a person, it is invalid. So if the cow helps the person, now that qualifies as a yoke, and it doesn't qualify. So God just said no yoke. They added all this other stuff. Yes.
They're preparing.
Yes. This. Yes, this, so that when the temple. Well, people die all the time, though. So they're expecting to build a temple again and fully implement the Levitical system again, Leviticus and Numbers, the whole sacrificial system. And so this is part of it. And because this is so specific, right, you have to have a red heifer and has to have all these, you know, I mean, God's laws seems to be a little more general. Their interpretation seems to be a little more specific. But they are ready so that when the Dome of the Rock gets whatever done to it, they can put up their temple and they can be ready to start the Levitical system again.
So they're not concerned about the other animals and being sacrificed, the unblemished lambs and blah, 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 all that other stuff. They're just because of the specificity of this one. That's why they're in the breeding program.
Right. This is going to be harder to come by, especially if it has to be red with not even two hairs of another color, than an unblemished one-year-old lamb. That's going to be a little more easily come by than a perfect red heifer. Yeah. Yes. But no, they are, I mean, when you were there in the Jewish quarter, did they have the menorah? They have a lot of the furniture built. Ready to put into the temple.
And it's behind glass and you can look at it.
Yeah, you can see the menorah that they have built to put in the temple.
And the temple of Showbread,
it's all in the Jewish quarter in Jerusalem, Old City Jerusalem.
They're ready. And the clothes for the priests.
They're ready for the wrong thing, aren't they?
What?
Aren't they ready for the wrong thing?
Well, yes, they're ready for the temple. I mean, and the temple is going to be built again. We have the temple in Ezekiel that has not been built. And remember when we studied Leviticus, we said sacrifices can be offered even after Christ because not all the sacrifices are for forgiveness of sins. Some of the sacrifices are for worship, right? The burnt offering, the peace offering, and the grain offering. Those three are for worship of God. They are not for my sins have to be covered, right? So obviously Christ's death still covers our sins, but those sacrifices can still be made to God even after Christ because they're just in worship of God. So how that's all going to play out, I don't know. It'll be very interesting. But what'd you say?
I said, I wonder how that fits into Revelation.
Right.
So yeah, that's what we're thinking.
But we do know that a temple will be built. Yeah.
But then during the millennial kingdom, Christ will reign from it.
Right.
And some of the Old Testament feasts. I mean, in Zechariah it says, any nation that doesn't come sacrifice come in to celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles.
Right.
There will be judgment on them. I can't remember. God won't send rain or something. Right. So some of those Old Testament feasts will be
celebrated again. Yep.
Which means they got to have a temple because they set up their little tabernacles all around the city.
Well, right, and you have to go be able to sacrifice at temple because that was the only place you could sacrifice.
When you said there in the future there's no need for a sacrifice for sin, but there is
you know, the sacrifices for worship.
Right.
I get that. Where does uncleanness
fall into that?
Is that fall into the sin part, or does that fall into the worship part?
That's a great question. I don't.
Let us know next week.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That, my question was: so is the red heifer a necessary part of it if it's still part of worship? It would still be a necessary.
You know, verse 9 says it is a purification from sin.
Okay.
So I just wonder if maybe not.
Right.
Because yeah. Christ is, well, and in, we're going to get there at the very end, but in Hebrews 9:13-14, Jesus' blood is compared to the red heifer's ashes. So then that would make me think, no,
we're already clean. Clean all the time.
Yeah, right, because we have the righteousness of Christ, right. Even though we're not practically clean.
What's that in Hebrews?
Oh, we'll get there. Hebrews 9:13-14. That's okay. That's okay. We'll get there then. But yeah, great question, Joyce and Terry. Okay, so that this is the cow, the heifer, the very specific red one that they have to get. Israel has to provide. Okay, a cow would produce a large quantity of ashes. Okay, you know, much more than a bird or a lamb or a goat. So this ritual would not have to be done as often, okay? So once you run out of ashes, you're going to have to do it again, right, and have another red cow. But it's going to, you know, produce as many ashes as possible at a time, so you don't have to do this on a daily basis, okay? Verse 3, the cow is to be given to Eleazar the priest. Eleazar is currently Aaron's oldest son. He is actually the third born, but Nadab and Abihu died. So he is going to be the one that's the next high priest. So the question is, why is Aaron not in charge of this ceremony? Why is it Eleazar? One, Aaron is the high priest, and he should not be, he has to do everything he can to avoid becoming unclean. Okay, so that he can perform his regular responsibilities in tabernacle. If Eleazar becomes unclean, there's still Ithamar, right? They can do Eleazar's responsibilities or whatever, help out in tabernacle. But if Aaron becomes unclean, there is no one that can do what he does because he's high priest. Okay, also Leviticus 21:11 said that high priest is not even allowed to become unclean if his parents die. Okay, so it doesn't matter who died. High priest is not to become unclean. Now, I'm sure inevitably, right, his wife at some point, some high priest's wife had to have died, when the high priest was there. So you would think that there would be times when the high priest could not avoid becoming unclean. But the high priest was not to do anything that would put him in danger of becoming unclean unnecessarily. Okay. Also, this is going to be a perpetual statute. Verse 10 says, so this goes on into the future. Eleazar is going to be the next high priest. So it's almost the passing of the torch. Now, I'm sure once Eleazar becomes high priest, this job then falls to somebody else because now he's high priest. But it is kind of a passing of the guard. Yes, because exactly. Aaron dies in the next chapter. Yep. Okay. And also, this ceremony takes place outside the camp. It says, verse 3, she'll give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp. Leviticus 21:12 says the high priest is not to leave the sanctuary. He is not to go outside the camp. He is not to become unclean unnecessarily. Okay, if he goes outside the camp, he might come into contact with something, somebody that makes him unclean, and he's to avoid that at all costs. Okay, because the high priest has a greater likelihood of defiling the tabernacle than anybody, because he's allowed places nobody else is allowed to go. So, Eleazar, not the high priest. Okay, he takes the cow outside the camp, and it is slaughtered in his presence. So, somebody else slaughters it. So now we have two people. And my guess is it would be a Levite. It doesn't specifically say that, but my guess it would be a Levite that slaughters the cow. But Eleazar himself does not slaughter it. Okay, he leads the cow outside the camp. Somebody else kills it while he watches. Okay. Verse 4. Next, Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of the meeting 7 times. Most likely, okay, because you have the tabernacle and the door faces east, right? And the priests would have camped on the east side of the tabernacle anyway, so probably the shortest way outside of camp would just be to continue to lead it east, somewhere outside camp. So when he turns around to sprinkle it toward the tabernacle, he's sprinkling it west toward the altar and toward the Ark of the Covenant. Okay. Seven times, we know in the Bible, this is the number of completion. Okay. He is also sprinkling the blood towards the altar, where a normal sacrifice, the blood is sprinkled and poured out. So this is almost like a sacrifice, but outside the camp, not in tabernacle. Next is what's pretty, I thought was really interesting. Verse 5, then the heifer shall be burned in his sight, its hide, its flesh, and its blood. This is the only time when in a sacrifice the blood is required to be burned. Most often the blood is poured out. There's some other purpose for the blood.
And I thought the entrails had to be removed.
Yes, and normally the entrails have to be removed, and here all that, its stomach and its intestines and all of it is just burned up. Yeah.
It didn't smell good.
Well,
yeah, it's outside the camp, but yes. Yeah.
Still.
Yep. Okay, blood is the most potent cleansing and sanctifying agent in the Bible, right? When Adam and Eve sins, God kills an animal to cover their nakedness, right? Then in the Levitical system, it is the blood, right, that is put on the horns of the altar. It is the blood that's poured out at the base of the altar. It's the blood that the high priest carries into the Ark of the Covenant and sprinkles on the mercy seat. Right, and God says, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission of sin. And it is Christ's blood that had to be shed on the cross for our sins. So in God's economy, blood is what takes away sin. Now, there's nothing magic in the blood of a cow. Okay, remember, the Levitical model is a model pointing to a reality. Christ is the ultimate fulfillment of the model. Okay, so it's not that sheep and goat and cow blood has magic in it to forgive sins. All of it is pointing to Christ's blood, who has the power to forgive sins. Okay. So here the blood is burned where it is normally poured out. So that then gives the ashes their purifying or cleansing, quote unquote, power. Okay. Now again, it's not magic. This is all a model. Okay, but because the blood is burned, now the ashes are what's going to be used to cleanse you from being unclean, from touching the dead. What?
Not a power, it's a property.
Yes, yes. Okay, but what else is burned? It's not just the cow, okay? Verse 6, the priest shall take cedar wood, hyssop, and scarlet material. Does anybody remember where we've run into those three things before? Yes? What were they used for? Do you remember?
Is that incense?
No. It was for cleansing the leper. When you were cleansed as a leper, right, the priest comes outside the camp, examines you, and then he sprinkles blood on you with these things. And a house, if a house had leprosy, remember, had a spot in it, it had to be cleansed with these things. Remember, and there was the bird over the running water, and you had to wring its neck and all that stuff, but you had to use the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet material. So these three things are also thrown in with the burning cow. So these are all items needed for a cleansing sacrifice, as we see with the leper. And all of those things are then reduced to ash. So that's in Leviticus 14, if you want to know, is the cleansing of the leper, 3 through 9, and then of the leprous house, 49 to 53, verse 49 to 53. Okay, so all of it is reduced to ash. Why exactly those three items? I don't know, because God said so. Okay, sorry, I don't have a better answer than that. Yes, it is very consistent. So that's how you cleansed a leper, which was one of the most serious ways of becoming unclean, you know, and touching a dead person is also a very serious way of becoming unclean. So. Yep. Yes, and I think, isn't that what they used to give Jesus his drink? Mm-hmm. On the cross, I believe, was hyssop.
Hyssop is a plant.
It is a plant.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Okay. Verse 7, the priest shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in water and afterward come into the camp, but the priest shall be unclean until evening. Okay, so when Eleazar starts this whole business, he's clean. Ceremonially clean. But this whole process makes him unclean, but not a serious unclean. This is the like mild unclean where all you got to do is wash your clothes, bathe, and then you're just unclean till evening, and then you're fine. Okay. Also, verse 8, the one who burns it, remember there was another guy who slaughtered the cow and burns the cow. That person, my guess is probably a Levite, would also wash his clothes, bathe, be unclean until evening. Okay, so they were allowed into camp, but they would have to be unclean until evening. So this whole process makes the priest, Eleazar, and the person who's helping him become unclean until evening. Okay. Verse 9, now we have a third person involved. My guess is, again, another Levite, because they were given to the priesthood to help them in all their jobs. Now a man who is clean, so this is a clean person, collects the ashes, gathers up the ashes of the heifer, and deposits them outside the camp in a clean place. So he would gather up the ashes, presumably put them in something, right? You're probably not going to want just a pile of ashes sitting out, because what if it rains, right? Then there goes all your stuff to make you clean. And they would deposit them at a very specified location outside the camp. So you'd think it's probably one of the Levites' jobs when they're wandering in the wilderness to make sure that this jar of ashes gets moved properly from place to place. You would think. Then they'd have to go through this whole process again. I mean, these are valuable ashes. Well, but okay, but it's also used it's going to be used a lot. So it might decrease in quantity quite quickly. But yes. And I just thought that it would need to be moved. But obviously, once they're in the land, it's not going to need to be moved. It could sit. Yes. Yep. Yep. Okay. So these ashes are ready to be used in the purification process of cleansing a person who's come in contact with the dead.
But it doesn't tell us that yet.
It does. Well, it says. Yes, it doesn't tell that. Because in 9, it just says it is a purification of sin. You're to keep it as water to remove impurity. Okay? Which you're like, it's ashes, not water. The water comes in the second half of the chapter. Okay? But these ashes are going to act kind of like an instant sin offering for anyone who needs it. So instead of having to make a sin offering yourself and journeying down to Jerusalem or going to the tabernacle and paying for a sacrifice or providing one of your own, this is going to be, really, it's an instant sin offering. You add water, and then it's a sin offering.
So it's not just a, as you say earlier, the unclean produced by the dead body, it's really any sin?
No, no. This instant sin offering is only for cleansing from touching the dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it is. Seriously, you just add water.
What's interesting is we've been going over like pilgrim times and how they made soap.
Yeah.
It was like you had to take ashes and then like boil them with
lard
to make soap. So
yeah.
That's interesting how it like all ties.
It's kind of is a cleansing agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, like literally.
Yeah. I have not tried it, but.
Yeah. My mom used to make soap that
just
way
like that?
For doing laundry when I was a kid. Lye, no, I don't know if
she was lye, not fat.
Yeah.
It's what kind of ashes?
Well, you know, I can't remember if she put ashes in it. That was a long time ago.
Oh.
There was some sort of like chemical. process, though, once you combine the two with the heat. So then it became a
soap. Yeah.
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 Product.
Goodies.
Chemical reaction. Let's go with that.
God made it work.
Okay, so the person who also gathers up the ashes, that person also becomes unclean until evening. Again, he has to wash his clothes and body, and then he's unclean until evening. Okay. Verse 10 says it's a perpetual statute. Okay. So contact with the dead is going to be a continual problem, right? Because we live in a sinful world. People are always dying. Okay, so this.
Especially this.
Well, that's what I said. So this was a solution going forward, but, you know, wandering in the wilderness, there's going to be a lot of dead. So you're going to need a process to be able to deal with the uncleanness. Okay, and again, there is only one law for the Israelites and the foreigner living among them. So there's not two standards. One standard, the Israelite, the foreigner among them, they all have to obey this law. Okay. Verse 11 through 13 explains what this is all for, right? If you don't read, you read the first part and you're like, what in the world is all this rigmarole for? Verse 11, the one who touches the corpse of any person shall be unclean for 7 days. That one shall purify himself with uncleanness with the water. And we find out what the water is later on the third day and on the seventh day, and then he will be clean. Okay, so this is to purify Israel from contact with the corpse. Becoming unclean by touching the dead is a big deal, and it produces a high level of impurity. And we know this because you are unclean 7 days. And typically, most of the time when you became unclean, you're just unclean for a little, you know, you're unclean for only a little bit. And then a lot of times just that day. And then by evening, if you've washed and whatever, then you're clean. Okay. I mean, there are other things if you have a child and all that kind of stuff. But touching the dead is one of those that makes you unclean for a very long time, a whole week.
Now they're in the desert wondering, where yes. are they getting the water for all their washing? It just dawned on me. I don't remember where, if we've ever discussed it, where.
Didn't they dig a well?
No, probably not. But who provided all their water?
God.
God did, right? And what are they always complaining about? They don't have water. Right, exactly. Chapter 20 is about water again. So they've complained several times about water, but I'm sure, and remember, when they wander in the wilderness, they only ever leave when God leaves, right? When God leads them to a specific spot. So when the cloud rises up from over the tabernacle and starts to move, that's when they pack up camp and move. So it wasn't like they were constantly on the road. They would have camped somewhere, right? And until God moves again, and so God would have made sure that they had water until he decides that they don't need water, and then they're going to complain about it.
That's a lot of water. All it has to do is hit a rock. Miracles.
Right. Well, and doesn't Hebrews say that they were followed by the rock?
Yeah.
Isn't that what Hebrews
yeah,
said?
Uh-huh, and the rock was great.
Yeah.
What?
That's what Hebrews says.
That they were followed around the wilderness by the rock. And I can't remember where, but it's almost like they were followed around by the rock that produced water, and so they always had water. That was going to be part of it. We're going to run into some plagues, the bronze serpent.
It says 1.2 million people died in the wilderness.
Yes. Approximately.
Because they didn't obey God. Well, after over 38 and a half years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be, so God had said that everybody 20 years old and older who had been counted in the census, the military census, were going to die. And so then presumably also their wives died because they were part of the older generation. But if you think, you're 20 years old, and you get counted 40 years. Now you're only 60. So you are dying young. Now somebody might have been 80, right? And if they live the full 40 years, which they're probably not going to be, they'd be 120, which would have been, you know, normal, you know, for them to have died. But because everybody 20 years old and older males died, that means a lot of people died young that technically shouldn't have. right, given normal life expectancy, but they did because of their rebellion against God. Right, so which makes this law even more important because more people are dying than just your normal accidents, disease, old age would have killed off. Yeah.
So the contamination was probably not spread, whatever's killing all these people?
Possibly, but it's also to show the holiness of God. That when you have come into contact with death, because remember, God is the God of life. Right? Death was the punishment of sin. So now you are in contact with death. You cannot come into fellowship with a holy God, the God of life, until you have become clean. And he has provided a way for you to become clean. And that's why Hebrews compares Jesus to the red heifer. Because Jesus is the ultimate sacrifice that makes us clean, that removes the stain of death from us, that makes us able to be in fellowship with a holy God. And that's permanent. I mean, depending on who you were, you could have had this process done to you multiple, multiple times. You know, your mom dies, then your dad dies, then your aunt dies, then, you know, and who knows? And you could have had to do this over and over and over again. But Christ only had to die once for all, and once we are clean in Christ. He is compared to all. He's not just compared to the red heifer, but yes, but but he is specifically compared to the red heifer because he also cleanses us from this uncleanness as well.
So how often did they have to kill a red heifer if they've got the ashes?
I don't know.
All the ashes are gone and then they kill another one?
I'm sure once it got to a certain level, they're like, we better kill another one so we don't run out. But I don't know. Yes.
So the family goes down from wherever they live to Jerusalem. They do a red heifer thing.
No, I think.
They had no ashes.
Okay, but I think in once they were in Israel, I think the ashes were scattered throughout the land.
Because the Levites.
Because the Levites did it. And so you would have a red heifer, probably several red heifer ashes somewhere up in Galilee, several down in Judea, several throughout Samaria.
Unlike the other, when I sin, I have to take my own sin offering. Unlike that, I
yes.
can just grab some ashes from whoever has ashes.
Yes, because they would have been deposited in strategic locations throughout all of Israel. So maybe you would have had to journey a little bit, but it wouldn't have been all the way down to Jerusalem.
And
No, it's not. And I think that is just from practical, have figured out, yeah.
Okay, I'm curious about this rock you're following around.
Yes.
I'm trying to find it for some reason.
I have heard it's Christ compared to the rock.
Go ahead. What's your question?
Christ is the rock.
Yeah, I have heard that, but I haven't had the physical.
I just looked it up and I couldn't find any verse out of Hebrews that went with it.
What was your question?
Where it says the rock that followed them was Christ.
I would think that would have been a rock.
See, I shouldn't say something, right, unless I know where it is.
Yeah, you got me all curious.
Just
now,
say what
Kenny
says, I'll tell you next week.
I know it's in there. I just don't understand. I can't find it.
Go ask your son-in-law. He might be able to come right up with it. Where is Jesus called the rock? Yep.
It's not going to be in Hebrews. Yeah, it's 1 Corinthians 10:4.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not Hebrews.
Where was it?
1 Corinthians 10:4.
Oh my gosh, Kyle just told me.
Yep.
And my phone just told me that too. He goes, no, it's not Hebrews. I think 1 Corinthians 10:4.
It says, and they drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it says And Austin and I were talking about that last night too, and he's like, I don't know if we can go that far to say Christ is the rock, but now we can.
10:4
There's a lot of songs that say that, so I figured they must have got that song.
I thought it was Hebrews, but it's not.
Okay. We were just in the wrong book.
See, this is my problem. I know. I'm like, oh, it's somewhere, and then that's Kyle. He always knows exactly where it is. Oh, his mind just works like that. I always thought I was really good at memorizing things until I married Kyle. All right, but we digress. Okay, so was that your question, just where is it, Joyce? Okay, great. Glad we found it. All right. Okay, so we're in verses 11 through 13 of Numbers 19. Here, the uncleanness is emphasized 5 different times. It says you are unclean. Verse 11, you are unclean for 7 days. Verse 12, you need to purify yourself from uncleanness. Verse 12, at the end, if you do not purify, you will not be clean. And then verse 13, at the end, he shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still upon him. Okay, so this uncleanness was a big deal. This is the emphasis. You touch a dead body, you are unclean. God now has provided a way for you to be clean. Okay, preventative measures were necessary. The holy cannot come into contact with the unclean. If there was no way to cleanse yourself from having touched the dead body, inevitably the tabernacle is going to become unclean, right? Because we're going to find out in verse 22, not only are you unclean, you are contagious unclean. Meaning if you touch somebody else, if you touch something, now that person or that thing is also unclean. So this is a high degree of uncleanness. So if people are unclean from touching a dead body and they're contagious unclean, it's going to spread throughout the camp like wildfire, and the tabernacle is going to become unclean, right? And God will no longer be able to dwell with his people. And there will be judgment from God because the holy cannot come into contact with the unclean.
So for us today,
yes.
Christ living in us,
yes.
Cleanses us from,
yes, all uncleanness. Yep.
So
yep.
Would it still pertain to us to be able to touch any dead body?
No. Okay, this is part of the ceremonial law. And remember, this is a picture, right? Because in Leviticus, you had to approach God in a very specific way, right? Now, through the death of Christ, we are able to boldly come into the Holy of Holies, right? Even Aaron did not ever boldly enter the Holy of Holies. I'm sure he entered with much trembling and trepidation, right? But because of Christ, because he is the fulfillment of this entire model, now, that is why we don't have to do all these things anymore, because he is the ultimate fulfillment. And so we can boldly waltz into the Holy of Holies and have direct access to God the Father, when in the model, your average Joe Schmo Israelite would never have dreamed that that is even possible. Because the only way to approach God is through sacrifice, and the only one that can actually enter the presence of God is Aaron one day a year. And even that with very strict preparation, you know, and I'm sure he was in and out of there as fast as he could go, because it was scary to come into the presence of a living God, you know. And so I think we take our access to God too much for granted and to take it too flippantly. So we need to have the balance of, yes, we can boldly approach God, but we need to come with more of Aaron's fear and reverence than maybe we do. Now, we don't have to be afraid, right, that God's going to strike us dead because we're unclean or didn't do the right ritual, because Christ did it all perfectly for us. And that is what it means when we now have the righteousness of Christ, because he has done it perfectly. Okay. Verse 12, end of it. But if he does not purify himself on the third day and on the seventh day, he will not be clean. Okay. And verse 13, it says he shall be cut off from Israel. So God has provided a way for you to become clean if you refuse it. If you reject God's way of becoming clean after touching a dead person, you will be cut off. And remember, we've talked about that. Cut off means that God will judge you. God will judge you at a given point, and you don't know when, and he will take care of it. You will be cut off because you have refused to avail yourself of the means God has provided for you.
Question.
Yes.
Someone was unclean, how are anybody else supposed to know if he cleaned himself besides God?
Right. We're going to get there on what you're supposed to do. Now, there would have been instances, right, there would have been instances where, like, if your mom dies in your tent, right, people are probably going to know about it. But there are instances on what happens if you come across a grave or a bone or a dead body in the field. So there could have been instances where you did come in contact with the dead body and nobody would know, right? Well, who knows? God does. And so the judgment is that you will be cut off, which means God himself will judge you. So it might be something that, you know, you should then say, I am unclean and I need this done for me to become clean, right? But if you don't, then God knows and he's going to be the one to judge you.
Mm-hmm. In the Old Testament, does that consistently mean that when the person mm-hmm. will be cut off, it means God will judge them?
Yeah, because a lot of times it's used of sins that maybe are not obvious, or other people, like it's used, I think, of adultery and things that maybe other people wouldn't necessarily know about to be able to make sure that you do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So it's not 100% sure. Commentators differ. And so there were times when Israel maybe did know or would have been able to bring some sort of judgment, but they think that a lot of times it means God will take care of the judgment himself. And you don't know when it's coming, but know that you cannot hide your sin from God. Right? Or he might send a disease or an accident or something, you know. Yeah. 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 All right. Any other questions, verse 1 to 13?
Would touching the body be the only thing? I mean, we're saying touching, we're saying in contact.
We're going to get there. It's in the next section. The answers are in the next section.
All right, okay.
Anything else? All right, someone read for me, please, verse 14 to 22.
This is the law when a man died in a tent. Everyone who comes into the tent and everyone who is in the tent shall be unclean for 7 days. Every open vessel which has no covering tied down on it shall be unclean. Also, anyone who in the field touches one who has been slain with a sword or who has died naturally or a human bone or a grave shall be unclean for 7 days. Then for the unclean person, they shall take some of the ashes of the burnt purification from sin, and flowing water shall be added to them in a vessel. A clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water, and sprinkle it on the tent and on all the furnishings and on the persons who were there and on the one who touched the bone or the one slain or the one dying naturally or the grave. Then the clean person shall sprinkle on the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day, and on the seventh day he shall purify him from uncleanness, and he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean by evening. But the man who is unclean and does not purify himself from the uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly, because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water for impurity has not been sprinkled on him. He is unclean. So it shall be a perpetual statute for them, and he who sprinkles the water for impurity shall wash his clothes, and he who touches the water for impurity shall be unclean until evening. Furthermore, anything that the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches it shall be unclean.
Okay, so again, it starts with this is the law, which is how verse 2 started. Again, that word is Torah. Okay, and this second section tells us exactly how the ashes are to be used and when. Okay, so the first section is kind of how you generate the ashes, general idea. It's for something to do with touching the dead. This tells us how to do it. Okay, 14 through 16, there are two places you can become contaminated. Inside and outside. Okay. So it deals first with inside. Okay. If someone dies inside, then everyone inside the tent, whether you've actually touched the dead body or not, doesn't matter, you are unclean. Now, this talks about tents because they're wandering in the wilderness, living in tents, but it's going to most likely translate to house or structure, whatever they're in the land, when they're in the land. Okay. Also, anyone who enters the tent before it has been cleansed, they also become unclean. Okay, so you would have had to communicate, I'm sure, somehow, don't come in, right? Stay out. Or you become unclean. Maybe there was some sign. I don't know. Maybe they came up with that. Maybe your mom died and, you know, the husband and son are working with the sheep or whatever. Well, they're going to want to maybe see mom. And so then they come in and they know they're going to become unclean. But that's okay because, you know, it's a relative or something like that. Okay, but if you just come into a tent before it has been cleansed, you become unclean. Okay, also uncovered vessels become unclean. Okay, so this is similar to Leviticus 11, 32 to 34. If you remember, when an unclean animal dies or falls on your pot or inside something, you know, this is the similar idea. You had to break it or empty out the contents or wash it, depending on what type of pot it was. What?
If a big animal fell, it would have broken.
Yeah, I know, but these are like little critters, like lizards and stuff. Oh. Yeah, would be most likely to have gotten into your pots. Oh, sorry, 11, 32 to 34. And that talked about if an unclean animal dies and falls on your vessel and what to do with it. Yes, pottery, yeah. And then if it was ceramic or whatever else, it had to be washed. And so presumably those same rules apply here. But it says if it's not covered, right, no covering tied down on it, so this would just be the open ones, where if it had a covering, then you didn't have to do all that, okay? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Okay, so that's what happened inside. Outside, right, if you're in an open field, you had to actually touch the dead body, the bone, or the grave. So just being there did not necessarily make you unclean. Now, this could have been on purpose or accident, right, because it says anyone who has been slain with a sword. So if you kill somebody, right, if you're in war and kill somebody, well, now you become unclean, right? Or who has died naturally, you might go out to gather up the body. Well, now you are unclean. Whoever has to gather the body and then bury it, prepare it for burial, okay? That person's going to be unclean, so that would be very purposeful. But you could also stumble across a bone or a grave on accident, right, and become unclean. So this could be on purpose or an accident, and it is more likely that out in the field it could happen where nobody else would know, theoretically, okay? So this is like what Rita was talking about. You would need to be honest and say, I'm unclean, and this is what happened, and I need to be cleansed. Okay? Okay, but inside, if you are just there, right, you become unclean. Outside, you actually have to physically touch to become unclean. Okay, then what do you do? Verse 17 to 19, there are three stages for the purification process. You have to make the mixture of water, the unclean have to be sprinkled, and then the person sprinkling the unclean person now becomes unclean and has to wash. Okay?
Well, this doesn't have to be done by the Levites. Anybody could do it.
Yeah, so again, making the mixture, sprinkling the unclean, and then the person doing the sprinkling also has to be cleansed. Okay? Now, it says just a clean person. If you look at verse 18, a clean person. Now, so this sounds like it could be anyone. My guess is it was probably a Levite. Again, I'm not sure. But the Levites were, remember, in 48 cities all throughout Israel as well. So it kind of sounds to me like anyone who's clean could do this, and maybe that's how they did it. But it was definitely, this did not have to be done by a priest, and that's the point. Is it didn't have to be a priest. Okay, so you make the mixture. Verse 17, take some of the ashes of the burnt purification from sin. Okay, so these are the ashes of the cow, the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet material. Okay, you take some of this. I'm sure they figured out how much is needed. I don't know. Okay, it doesn't say specifically in scripture. And you add, it says flowing water. That word for flowing could also be translated living. Living water. Okay.
It says fresh water in this.
Okay. And it. It's a plant. They think it might have been a marjoram plant, but it's a certain type of plant. What?
I thought maybe it was some type of soap.
No, it's a type of plant. Yep. Yep. Good question. So it's living water, which I thought was interesting because Christ is called our living water. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I don't know exactly what that meant, but I mean, maybe it was water from the rock, which is Christ. I don't know. But you have to take the ashes and you have to take flowing or living water and you mix them. Okay. And again, that's why I said it's kind of like an instant sin offering. You add water. Okay. And what?
The ashes included the burnt
heifer. The heifer, the cedar wood, and the scarlet material. Because while the cow was burning, you added in the other stuff. Okay, and so all the ashes would have contained all of that. And remember, again, the ashes contained the burnt blood, which was not normal. You did not normally burn the blood. Okay, so that was the mixture. Then, and again, they call this for a second time purification from sin. Then you had to sprinkle the unclean. Okay, so verse 18, a clean person would take hyssop. So this is this plant. The rabbi said it had to be 3 stalks of this plant. That's what they say, even though it doesn't say that. That's what they say. Okay? And you sprinkle all that is unclean. Okay? So if you're inside, you're going to sprinkle the people. You're going to sprinkle the tent. And, you know, and if it's outside, anyone who touched. Okay? So the furnishings, it says. So in the tent, you're going to sprinkle everything and all the people. Outside, it's just going to be, if it happened outside, it's just going to be the person. Okay. And you had to do this on the 3rd and the 7th day of being unclean. Okay. No separation from the community is required and no additional sacrifice is required in order to become clean. No, it doesn't say so. But verse 22 says it is catching, so you most likely isolated yourself, so you did not pass your uncleanness on. But it doesn't say you have to go outside the camp. But you might have. You might have gone to the unclean camp in order to just make it easier. I don't know. But it doesn't specifically say you have to do that. Okay, then verse 19. Then the clean person shall sprinkle on the unclean on the 3rd and on the 7th day. And on the 7th day, he, the clean person, shall purify him, the unclean person, from uncleanness. And he, the clean person, who's now unclean, shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and shall be clean by evening. So the person who does the sprinkling also now becomes unclean, but not 7 day unclean, only until evening unclean. Okay.
So anything, even though they sprinkle it on the 3rd day, they're still not clean. And so anything the unclean person touches,
yes,
also becomes unclean. So they're not clean until
the 7th day.
And they've all washed.
Yes. Yes.
I see why it'd be easier to go to unclean camp.
Yeah. And then just come out and be sprinkled and go back and come out and be sprinkled again and then you're done. Right. So I don't know. It doesn't specifically say you have to do that, though, but it might have been easier just to make it so that other people don't become unclean, too. Okay. Verse 20, but the man who is unclean and does not purify himself from uncleanness, that person shall be cut off from the midst of the assembly because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water for impurity has not been sprinkled on him. He is unclean. This is basically a repeat of verse 13. Okay. But it emphasizes the seriousness of not obeying these laws. Okay. Death makes you unclean and God has provided a way to deal with it. If you do not obey, you remain in your uncleanness and you are living in a state of rebellion. Okay, this can bring defilement to the tabernacle. It says, because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. Okay, the tabernacle was the center of their society, and you were to not do anything to defile the tabernacle. You know, this verse reminds me of today, where God has provided a way to be cleansed from our sin, and yet so many people reject it, right? And they live in a state of rebellion. Verse 21, so it shall be a perpetual statute, again, repeat. And he who sprinkles the water for impurity shall wash his clothes, and he who touches the water for impurity shall be unclean until evening. So that's kind of a clarification of verse 19, that you, the one sprinkling the water becomes unclean, and this law is going to continue when Israel is in the land. It's not just for the wandering in the wilderness. Again, verse 22, furthermore, anything that the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches it shall be unclean until evening. Okay, so it sounds like it's contagious, but if you do catch it, you're just unclean till evening. You're not unclean 7 days, but still, you don't. Everybody is going to try to remain in a state of cleanness as much as possible. Okay, let's go to Hebrews 9. This is where Jesus' blood is compared to the ashes. Can someone read for me Hebrews 9, verse 13 and 14? Hebrews 9, 13 and 14.
Does the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer sprinkling those who have been defiled sanctify for the cleansing of the flesh? How much more will the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without blemish to God, cleanse your conscience from dead works to serve the living God?
Okay, so this includes all the sacrifices, Terry. The goats and the bulls, right? The blood and the ashes of a heifer. Okay, so it's all of it. It's not just... But... So this is comparing that in the model, right, the Levitical model, the goats and the bulls and the ashes of the heifer, right, those were what made you clean and holy before God. How, if that is how God set it up to work back then, how much more is the blood of Christ, right, going to cleanse us as we stand before a holy God? Okay, but Jesus also, he cleanses our hearts and not just our bodies, right? For the cleansing, this uncleanness, it was you wanted to make sure that you were okay to enter the presence of God. But that, and remember in Leviticus, we said you could do the model perfectly and still not be saved, right? Because you could have gone through this whole rigmarole and obeyed the law to a T and your heart not be changed, right? And so even then it didn't matter. It didn't count, okay? But Christ, when he cleanses us, he changes our hearts. He gives us a new heart. So we might not do everything perfect on the outside, but inside we have been made new. Questions? Leviticus 19.
You know what? It's really interesting. I don't know where he gets this. But I was looking at the notes under Hebrews 9:13. Mm-hmm. Numbers 19. It is said that in the history of Israel, only 6 red heifers were killed and their ashes used. I don't know where to get that. Maybe history.
Okay.
Something. One heifer's ashes would suffice for centuries, since only a minute amount of ash was required.
So that's probably according to rabbinical tradition, would probably be where they get that. And you can see why the Pharisees and the rabbis had to make up all these extra laws, right? Because God just says, mix ash with water. He doesn't say how much ash. He doesn't say how much water. He doesn't, you know. And it's possible that God did say those things. It's just not, it wasn't important for us to know. And so God didn't record it. But yeah. And so maybe they did cart around huge amounts of ashes and they only used a little bit at a time.
So that's probably where they get the idea that when they came into the promised land, it was probably outside or in an area for each, where each son.
Well, and maybe the priest would take one red heifer out and burn it, and then those ashes would divided. Be divided and put outside the city, whatever, all throughout the land.
I'd like to know where he got that. It just said, it is said that in the history there's only six red heifers.
But that sounds to me like rabbinical something, you know.
Right.
We also know that they, you know, rarely followed
right.
all of this. So I would imagine yeah. most of them were early on, perhaps one later during David or Josiah's reign or something
right.
like that. But
one.
It also said for what, cleansing from sin? And this wasn't cleansing from sin. This was
it was pure. It was called the purification from sin. I mean, it was cleansing your uncleanness, but that's what it is called.
Okay.
It twice, brother. Now I'm not going to be able to find it. Verse 9, it is purification from sin, and then in verse 17, it says, "Take some of the ashes of the burnt purification from sin."
That's an incredible verse.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
A little
right.
bit, it's gonna last forever.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Or at least I think it would.
Right.
And it wasn't just a bowl, it had the extra stuff.
Yeah, the extra stuff.
Right. Which it doesn't also specify the quantity either.
Right.
I mean, are we talking about cedar wood or are we talking about cedar wood, you know?
Right. How much did they right. So but even a little bit, you know, would certainly make the
right.
total amount bigger and yep. make it last longer.
Yeah.
I would think the hyssop, does it have a certain smell to it?
There, I don't know that we're exactly sure what the hyssop is. They say that they think, my commentaries thought it was marjoram. Mm-hmm. It was the marjoram. Is that how you say that word? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Plant.
A
it's a spice.
It's a spice. We, yeah.
Okay.
My stuffing.
Yeah.
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 So that's what they seem to think it is.
Smell better too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that they were so worried about the smell, but
right.
yes. Marjoram?
Yes.
Oh, it's a, well, I mean, it's a spice we use in cooking.
Now, did they come
that's
in?
That's the only thing I ever use it for.
Oh.
And what, a clean place outside the camp is?
No. No.
Yeah. I wonder what, a well, jar outside the camp. I mean,
well, because they had to have a clean place to dispose. There was something else. In the sacrifices, they had to take something outside the camp and burn it.
Right.
And I can't remember which one it was.
Well, it's part of the burnt offering, isn't it? The insides and the...
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I believe so. The hide was
yes.
taken outside the camp and burned.
In a clean place, whatever.
So they had to have designated a spot. Maybe in Jerusalem, it was in the Kidron Valley somewhere. Right.
During this 38-year period.
Right.
That's a lot of people.
Right. Mm-hmm. And even if you only get this much, you know,
right.
how far does it go?
Right.
Right. But it's also this much ash in how much water.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know.
You wouldn't think that they'd want to mix so much
He's
ash with the spray and then you'd be throwing it all over stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, I still think that even this much with a little water...
For 2 million people, I can't imagine. I have to do a science ratio.
You do that.
Okay, I'll let you know.
You're in charge.
All right.
As long as the speck of ash is in it, since God
right.
didn't say the amount.
Right. What, right. And remember, this is all symbolic. There's nothing... There is nothing magical about the water. There is nothing magical about the ash. They do it this way because God said to do it this way. And it was a picture.
And maybe God did a like a, you know, the Elijah oil lady miracle with the ash, you know?
I don't
know. There's a rock following the Israelites through the desert. So
that's right. Yeah, that's the ash could be last and last.
Right. But if you just need a little bit, you know, and so.
A pinch.
Yep. All right. Any other questions?